Steve, I've got a closing hand for you. I'll let anybody else. We have, I suppose, about 25 minutes before I ask Brian to respond, and maybe we take three or four points at a time and see how we can distribute them between the fingers. So, who wants to go before yourself? Yeah.
I just want to ask a question. Given what went after listening to about the, an education there and the health crisis, and this is what really how he said last night, in blaming staff, working in the medical care for not washing their actual hands, being actually because of MRS saying that your hospitals. An obnoxious comment. How can the trade union leaders sit down with the most obnoxious right-wing tongues and go in for a partnership deal? The next issue is Mr. Dennis O'Brien, who was involved in a private institution in this country, in the Dublin Docklands, who was under investigation in this city for his things with being a gay, is now under investigation for what he done with Michael Lowry, is now under investigation for having a DG cell set up in Jamaica. The last point, when MacDoom was in there, when MacDoom was in the River Jordan, it's a pity the bastard didn't drown him.
All right, maybe...
On the point of procedure, can we ask people to stand up and speak?
Yes, I'm about to do that, Roy. To follow the procedure that we did adopt this morning, if people would say who they are and if they would stand up, they're speaking. So, yes.
John Means is my name. I'm from Campaign Against the Constitution of the Organ. I just want to make a brief reference back to the previous session of the mic. And just a practical suggestion which reflects back actually on something that was done a couple of years ago. Last weekend, apparently on behalf of us all, our president, who sometimes confuses herself with monarch, but he's out of his name, on behalf of all of us, made a tear-jerking speech about insulting the Quran, but said absolutely nothing about the torture system that is being aided by her government through Shannon Airport. Nothing whatsoever. Now, that balance is 100% wrong. The other thing that's 100% wrong, and it's related about how our elite relates internationally, was exemplified by her behaviour in Saudi Arabia, which is a notoriously repressive regime. No women were allowed in at her speech, which was involved in expanding trade links with Saudi Arabia and being nice to a reactionary regime. So one of the important traditions of our relationship to foreign powers has tended to be in St. Patrick's Day, where a number of our public representatives go and meet the leader of this system, President Bush and his friends, and kowtow to him and give him shamrock and stuff. Now, a number of us here were involved 2 or 3 years ago in saying, well, that's not the image of the Irish people or the Irish nation we're particularly happy with or proud of. And I would say fair play in particular to a number of public representatives in Dáil and a number of other people who signed a protest about this and demanded that our public representatives refuse to give this photo opportunity. Now, it's only a public it's a public relations gesture, but it has importance, and it has particularly importance this year when there are being demonstrations called all over the world for the following day, March the 18th, against that system. So I think that initiative should be tried again. We're fed up with being publicly associated with that kind of stuff, and actually Irish people on our side of the tradition have some honour in this. in that particular initiative, and also it goes back to a number of very courageous Irish people, as I reminded of a couple of weeks ago, who stood up against native Irish American bigotry on the Patrick's Day Parade in New York because they were excluded. Why were they excluded? Because they were gay. Well, it's time we associate ourselves with that very fine tradition, and we do it again this year.
Okay, John. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm Sinead Dubin, I'm with the Campaign Against the Constitution. Just one of the points just in making, when we're talking about the Services Directive, in case anyone's not clear about what happened this week, was a first reading. So it's not, again, this hasn't moved on, and it is going to come back. And Brendan explained that earlier. And I think that's important because we'll come into Parliament for a second reading. And I say that in the context of that in David Harvey, which a lot of people here be familiar with, in his recent book, in a recent book on neoliberalism, he said, if this is a class war, let's call it a class war. And when I listen to the people from the health services, I listen to Eddie talking about education, we've heard it all day that all the facets of an ordinary worker's life is attacked by these policies within the Services Directive, within INGAS. I have to put the question when you have two union leaders here, why is it that unions and in turn Labour would support that directive? And I don't say it confrontationally, but I do say it's like a question that just needs to be asked because it just does not make sense. And I just would like to put it out there, but I think that the words of Harvey, and that if it's a class war, let's call it a class war and let's not skirt around it, that these are the things that affect ordinary people's lives and our children's lives and their children after that. And I think that's the level of the seriousness with it. So that the unions and Labour and all of the NGOs, we all have an opportunity when this goes ahead again to Parliament, and we have it with the Council of Ministers as well, to demand that we do not want to live in a world that is like this.
Okay, Sinead. Now, there have been three contributions, but I'm going to take three more because I think they're more contributions than questions, and I'll come back and switch them around. So there were two here. Yourself, sorry. Yeah.
Sure. Pat O'Grady, my name from the Socialist Workers Party. First, I'd like to congratulate the organisers. It's been an excellent conference. I'd just like to come in. It's actually something Barry brought up, which I think is a very important point. The point of a triad, I think, is worth even teasing out a little bit more, because it does fit in with the importance of things like the Services Directive and so on. The notion of how that works, because a lot of us feel that if the Services Directive comes in, it can be that much more easy to privatise the health service and other public services. Easier, but you know, not quite impossible. When you think of triads, triads come in before the Services Directive. And the notion of how the Services Directives work and things like them, regressive legislation work, is it makes it easier for people like Mary Harney to say that it's a good idea to privatise the health service. It makes it easier when she gets criticism to say, oh, well, kind of the EU is forcing me to. But it doesn't stop her in advance of proceeding well down the road of inviting multinational corporations, not to the EU at all. Triad is, as Mary pointed out, a spin-off of Columbia Healthcare in the States. So the point I think that Brian referred to earlier, where the way in which the legislation, for example the Services Directive, the way in which it will be interpreted quite broadly, and all they've done is stuck a wedge in, they've applied a kind of an acceptable level label to the Services Directive, and as was pointed out, McCreevy has moved very quickly to draw attention to one particular part of the Services Directive, and that is private healthcare. He said there are contradictions. No doubt we can rely on Mr. McCreevy to resolve those contradictions. But this leads us on, and I'm trying to make a point about, I mean, the issue of immigration, I think, particularly came up when Eddie was talking about the the way in which awards of citizenship would be given to those who do well in school. It asks what the view of people who don't do too well in school would be. We had the Frank's comments about Dennis O'Brien comes up in this context. We have the vision of Dennis O'Brien at the O2 Ability Awards, the so-called patron, the man who owes €50 million at least in tax fraud, taken out of a system which would have greatly benefited people with learning disabilities and in the school system. And you have a corporate body in the O2 Ability Awards slapping each other on the back for how well they favour or support people with disabilities, meanwhile very blatantly discriminating against them in view of the right to emigrate into a country or not. And I think we have to be clear on two issues. One is we are completely against establishing any requirements for immigration. I mean, our principle should be a free movement, a proper free movement of labour, and without restricting those with disabilities or for any other reason, race, creed or anything else. But the other one is to lay clearly where the blame is in terms of the exploitation of immigrant labour in Ireland. We clearly should lay the blame on the employer, the person who pays the bad wages, the person who denies the sick pay and the annual leave and all the other protections. Because as was brought up earlier, I mean, in the country of destination, the big issue here is, in terms of the EU, yes, we should look, to the EU to improve the level of protection. But even the level of protection that we have in this country, when you see the issue with construction workers, the issue with GAMA and the Irish Ferries, we have to fight at every level, not just the EU, but against our own government. And I take up that point that was made earlier. It's absolutely correct. Trade unions, the Labour Party and all other elements of the left have got to absolutely be clear on which side they stand. This is a class war, and we should see it as such. And I don't think I'd agree with that issue about national sovereignty. This is an issue of class sovereignty. If these measures are to support those who benefit from corporate profits, which is a minority of the population, there is clearly a class that does not benefit. It in fact contributes to the profits of corporations, but doesn't get from them. I think it is the sovereignty of the workers, in not alone in Ireland, but across the EU, we should be fighting for. And I would call on all elements. There's a conference commission that's just about Marxism in 2 weeks to continue the debate and continue the kind of linking up of the left that I think we've been seeing over the last few months and few years. And again, congratulations to the organisation.
Thanks, Matt Potter. Yes, sir.
Mark Walsh of the ASCI and Canadian Free Constitution. I just wanted to let people know that the campaign started up, candidates campaigning and advertising in schools. And unfortunately, Cloud.com is really Cloud.org, but it's against advertising in schools. Hopefully, that will be expanded to campaign against what Eddie mentioned, the use of public private partnerships and other consortium collaborations. And also just, I found it very useful on the whole issue of cooperation improvement in health and education was George Monbiot of the Secretary of State and put into his examples of corporatization in health and education in education. And he talked about the European Roundtable of Industrialists that he mentioned on the platform and traced their history in how they pushed their agenda with the Commission, the EU Commission in Europe.
Okay, I think what I'm going to do, I'll never be asked to chair another meeting here again. I'll allow people to make announcements and make speeches and everything, but I think what I'm going to do is, can I just get some indication of how many more people want to contribute? Four. I'm going to allow those four people in, and I'm going to invite the contributors to respond. And I'm going to wind up and hopefully have you out of here at 4 o'clock. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Now,
my name is Brian. I just have two short questions for you. One is, you said the services director will go back to McCreevy and he reformat and rewrite. Specifically, will this go on the desk of Charlie McCreevy himself, or who will actually rewrite it? We were saying McCreevy would rewrite it. Who will actually rewrite it? Is it some business interest? Is it McCreevy's department? It's just my own education. And the other thing I'd like someone to touch on, what I'm starting to gain a little bit of understanding of the money laundering system that's gone through Ireland, where corporate profits are being put through the Irish system, so they pay less tax on it. I don't know too much about it, unless someone is willing. Is this part of the Services Directive? Is this happening already? Or like, just to elaborate somewhere on the money laundering system of corporate profits, basically.
Thanks, Brian. Eugene.
Jack, I share some of your things sometimes when you come to a left-wing meeting and throw everything in the kitchen, including the kitchen sink, into the debate and the discussion. We've been coming back to the focus of what the conference is about, with the European Union and its impact upon our lives, how it affects us. Brian mentioned there particularly with the question of how governments have been influenced and been forced to retreat on the seasons because of people themselves have organised themselves. What he mentioned about the question of renationalisation of railways and the opposition of the French and German governments to certain decisions that the European Union want to impose. And I think we can lose sight of, we can get overawed that this big body called the European Union somehow is indefeatable. I think it can be defeated if we focus properly on what it is. If we have a problem, the way to solve the problem is to make that problem somebody else's. We have a problem with our health services, we have a problem with our educators. It's because our government makes a decision based upon what it sees as the interest of the people in which it serves. We have to try to focus on that decision. We have to, if our government cannot deliver a particular thing, or is saying it cannot do something, or cannot invest something because of a new EU decision, therefore we have to make that position, our government's position, unattainable. Then we have to say, if the Irish government's got a problem, it must make that problem a European problem, a problem of the European Commission. We have to exploit their contradiction between what European monopolies want and what they can impose upon us, and what we can resist. We should try to make our demands much more focused about what we are demanding, who we are demanding them of, who we want our problem to be solved by, and if they cannot solve it, they have to be forced to go further. But this is about the democracy and the sovereignty. I don't believe it is very far to stop the workers in Europe and that all stuff. You have to make it concrete. People defend their jobs, defend their livelihoods, defend their communities, where they live and exist. Where they live and exist. So the question about what we want to do is knowing the power, where the power lies, where the decision making lies, and whose interest has been carried out. And Brian very clearly put it down that the attack upon public services is directed both nationally and internationally. But therefore the contradiction is, how do we make our government, how do we conform the contradiction, how do we exploit the contradiction what our government doing and what the European Union wants? We make that difficulty, those difficulties for them. And I think the whole question of, on the question of the back of the whole question of railways, the Irish government is now investing millions upon millions of euro of our money in the development of the rail infrastructure in this country. It's quite possible, and most likely, that whenever this massive investment in public transport is completed, that this will come under the pressure that we will end up having to reinvest itself off public transport. After this Irish government investing vast amounts of money from the Irish people into this thing. And I think this is what we should be focusing on. How do we develop and protect things, campaigns around issues like public transport, around issues like the railways or whatever else. But I think that's where we can make it real for people. Because now I've been involved in 101 campaigns around the European Union and these constitutions and various treaties and stuff like that. And it was always very difficult to get people's minds focused on it, because if you're talking in an abstract, the European Parliament will have this and the Council of Ministers of that and the Commission will have this, that and the other. People are saying, well, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? They couldn't get a focus on it. But now it's coming back home. Because basically the decisions that were made on the Single European Act, the Amsterdam Treaty, and all those things are now coming home to roost. Now it actually has taken material form of how people are affecting people's lives on a daily basis. They were all abstract debates. Might have been important for us in the left or whatever else, but they're abstract debates for most people. So how do we, therefore, it's coming back to here. It's coming back to here. The Single European Act and all these things, the international, all these things are coming back to haunt us now. So that we should be talking about how do we develop argument, how do we develop people's understanding of these things in a real way? How do we bring back to the point of democracy back to people? because this whole campaign is not just about economic but neoliberalism. The European Union is about establishing a corporate government devoid of any democratic accountability. And no matter how much power they give to the European Parliament, it will never be democratic. It will never be democratic. Because if you give power to it, it has to come from somewhere else. It has to come from somewhere else. It's not an abstract thing. So you give it to the European Parliament, go away to the Irish Parliament. Therefore, the point of where we have control and input is gets further and further away. So we make our arguments real, we make them concrete, and we define our campaigns around issues. We bring the European Union back down to what it's done. It is demolishing, it is potentially to demolish our public services, it is potential to force privatisation of what was already important state investments like ESD and various others. And I think we should get back to what about the European Union and its threat toward democracy and our ability to make decisions which affect us.
Thanks, Fuji. Stand here. Sorry.
Kevin Keane. But first of all, I just thought the contribution from Andy Conlon and the woman on the health services brought things down to earth a wee bit, because it had to be a bit abstract and not, you know, not really sure what it meant to people on the ground. Because, I mean, I rang somebody up today and asked them to come here, and when she said the service director, when I hear about it, I get sick in my stomach, I don't want to go. Because it's that level of fear, people know exactly what's happened. It's, like as Eddie said, a death of a thousand cuts. The health service education has been sabotaged. Like when Mary Harney was appointed, it's about as subtle as putting the heart of head in their bed. She knew what it meant. And that's, you know, that's the dilemma. You know, how do we actually oppose it? One way I would suggest hasn't been useful has been partnership. But I won't go into that. But I just take issue with some of the things that Brian brought up and Eugene as well. I think, like, in terms of the European Roundtable of Industrial Assembly, the EC commissioners, they may be very powerful, but are not as powerful as the states in Europe. Any state in Europe that wanted to block this thing could have stopped it. In fact, all the states are pushing through. All the states, you know, at that level, every state is in agreement with it, and state power has been used to impose barbarism, basically, on most people. People quoted 20% in the loop and 80% outside of the loop this morning. We talked about pushing back the working class 100 years. So, I don't think the answer is actually sovereign, you know, within sovereign states. I think the responsibility is on the labour movement and responsibility on an international level. They need to impose it on that. It's organised on an international level. The labour is also, division of labour is on an international level, and a lot of these services are transnational. So a solution has to be found which is international, and that's the responsibility of the labour movement. And I think that's the level of organisation that you need, and it's very much in the ambit of the Labour movement to actually put up the opposition. Now, one negative aspect of the alternative way of doing it was being, you know, like in cooperation and coordination. People talked about Dennis O'Brien, like the sort of fugitive. Recently, I read in the paper he was in Jamaica, where he's been profiting from the privatisation of telecommunications over there, and he had over as guests Billy Attlee and Tyrone Mulvey promoting partnership in Jamaica. That's what it's about. You know, we need to look at, you know, where this partnership is leading us. You know, if that's the type of company that you end up keeping.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. Just that.
Duncan Crowley, one of the media. First of all, thanks for having the panel. It's been very good. One of the things I'd like to talk about would be people are saying about how the mainstream media is not communicating, it's not presenting the proper story. So I'd encourage people to help build the alternative media system, which has been grown massively. The group, I don't know if everybody's familiar with Indie Media or not. Basically, in 1999 it formed during the Seattle protests, and it's grown into 150 plus groups or nodes around the planet in 50 plus countries,
The most recent one was Ukraine just about 2 weeks ago. Basically, it's a horizontally organised system. Anybody can participate, anybody can use it. It's there. I'd ask people who are here to add, maybe if they have their text or whatever. Some of this has been recorded, and I'll try to get onto other people who've recorded stuff so that that can be uploaded onto the site, so people who haven't been able to come here can listen to what's being talked about, they can read the text, they can add their contributions, links, etc, etc. So that's that, and that's grown, and hopefully people will help build that alternative media. And thankfully the villages have arrived onto the sheets as well, so or the press, so that's at least a positive move or a step. The other thing then is just looking at what's going on in the rest of the world, it's interesting what's going on in Latin America, and like with Brazil, Cuba, Venezuela and Bolivia, they're saying no to neoliberalism. What else is going to happen in Latin America, and what that might further push, who knows, but it's definitely interesting times there. And as well as that, the link with kind of artistic and cultural movements as part of the political movement. So I think in the Irish political world, a mixing of culture and artistic into political would be more beneficial. And on that note, this evening at 5 o'clock up in Lask and the WSM offices, someone from Chile is talking about what's going on in Latin America. That's at 5 o'clock. And followed by that, at 5:30, there's anarchist youth putting on a film, a big noise film about the Zapatistas. So that's on if anyone's go up there, and it's free. So that's it. So I encourage everybody to help build the alternative media network.
Thank you, Duncan. Now, I think maybe I'll allow each of the contributors, before we call on Brian, 3 minutes if they wish to respond to any of the comments which have been made. Obviously, you won't be able to respond to them all, but maybe, Brendan, you'd like to say something?
Just briefly on Brian's question. It may not be McCreevy that himself will be drafted. He's done the European Commission, but McCreevy is the Commissioner for the Internal Market. Penalizes people who are already the victims of EU neoliberalism. what we do have to address is the framework that impoverishes them. And if you look at, finally, if you look at the EU and the OECD's own reports on economic cohesion between Eastern Europe and the West, they say 30 to 40 years before this will catch up. This means structural mass unemployment in Eastern Europe, a huge pool of reserve labour. This is going to have an effect on wage rates and working conditions in the West. And we have to deal with it at a Europe-wide level. We cannot deal with it at an Irish level. So although it's difficult, we actually have to take it on and look at those that point in relation to Susan this morning. What things can we solidarise with at an international level? We actually have to take it on.
Now, I don't know, Eddie, do you want to say anything? Do you want to?
Yeah, well, it seems to me the key thing is what's coming up here at the end is at what level do you fight this and who's the real values and so on and so forth. See, I think, as I tried to say in my contribution, this is a multi-level process that's going on, all the way down from the gas to what the Irish government's doing locally. Now, in this, the Irish government shouldn't be allowed to say, look, this has all been opposed to this. There are three agents in this. They're quite happy to buy into this agenda, and they have. And that's why they're doing things. The best example, I think, recently is the PPP in schools. It's costing more money. They're perceived. They're ideologically committed to these things. That's the problem. And I think you have to fight this at these various levels. It's not a matter of saying one level is more important than the other. They're just different levels that seem manifest themselves, and you have to fight it. What you do have to do, though, I think you've got to bring home these things to people in terms they can relate to and understand. You know, the jargon and so on around this is impenetrable, some of it. The way the treaty was described this morning, I think, was a very good example of how difficult this can be for ordinary people. And those of us who are political activists and do this sort of stuff, find just to keep on top of these things. So. It's a multi-levelled thing. See, I think there's two things, there's three simple points. See, no matter where these things are, we fight bad things, you know. We're fighting things against bad things. They manifest themselves, we go, you know, get our unions involved, stop bad things happening. You've got to do that as a matter of course, no matter where it happens, sort of thing. The real problem is what vision Susan George called this morning, I think, for a Europe of the common goods. That's the debate we need to have. What does that actually mean? You know, is it going to be some construction which is adding for more national sovereignty? Are we going to fight perhaps more regulation at a European level? Because you have capital operating quite freely at a European level. Labour standards are not regulated at a European level. Pay, for example, is not a matter that's dealt with at a European level and so on. How are we going to the capital to operate at level and not have any regulatory framework which says there's certain things you have to do if you want to do that? Now that's the real basis we have to have. But out of all of this, I think, is that, you know, this is a dialectical process, you know. the big demo on Brussels the other day, workers from all over Europe are at it. These are the sort of things, positive things are coming out of this, you know, where European workers are fighting for them, where they will fight together. We can argue about whether the thing was good or bad outcome, but at least, you know, there is a process beginning to take place, in my view, where at an international level, people are really beginning to understand, listen, let's move beyond the rhetoric here. We do need to have actual international cooperation around these things. And perhaps, you know, that's certainly beginning to have the much higher level than I've ever seen before. Just things are going on. My own union is on. My own president is very actively, you know, encouraging these from international unions and making them real rather than rhetorical. And perhaps that's one good thing that's coming out of all this. But we shouldn't get it into our head that these are people, the unions writing about this, these baddies from the WTO and the GATT and the EU. Geez, we can't fight them. Of course we can fight them, you know.
I just want to make one really very simple point, and that is that I suppose I've been involved in health reform now for about 3 years, and I think, you know, you won't mind my saying, but it seems to me that the unions who represent the health workers in this country generally tended, certainly in the early years, to concentrate on fighting for their members, bread and butter. And I don't know if we still, to this day, really seen the full kind of scrutiny that I would personally like to see from the unions. I think that you know, we need much higher levels of critical awareness of something like the Handley report. We really need to get behind the spin. And I think that the unions have a huge role to play in this, and I would like to see them becoming much more centrally involved.
Thanks, Nora. Brian?
Thanks. Yeah, just briefly, I just wish we had such well-informed debates in London. We just don't have that. And I think that's also reflected in the marvellous demonstration in Dublin around the Irish ferries issue. My union sent delegations with their banners and they came back. They've never been so energised for 20 years. And I think that's the reality we're facing. Small countries can make a difference. We are facing a class war. I think the speaker about made such a good point. But it's a class war by different means. I think that's what we need to understand. It's the corporate bureaucracy creating those structures that the other speaker was talking about. They are the enemy of working people. And they are creating a new imperialism. It's a new empire they're developing. And just as the British Empire was seen as all-powerful, it was the Easter Rising that brought the British Empire to its knees. And I think small states can make that difference that labour movements in my country can't, because we haven't got that cohesion that you have, I think. This new imperialism, this new class war has new structures, and it's a new battlefield, and people are getting used to it, and that's why trade unions maybe are finding it hard to adjust to the new situation that we find ourselves in. It's a postmodern authoritarian developments in which our democratic structures are being slowly gutted of any real meaning in slow motion at such a rate that you don't notice until it's perhaps too late. But I don't think it is too late. My particular union, the RMT, 2 years ago we took a motion to conference saying the EU constitution is coming, and we were seen as complete Taliban. I mean, we were just on our own. And people were saying, well, what on earth are you wasting your motion to put this up, because you're going to get nowhere. And Crowley got up and he was stunned by the delegates on the floor. All hands went up in support of Bob Crowe and the RMT. And of course the chair said, card vote. And the big four unions were brought in to calm things down. But that set in motion the development where we could put a motion this year saying no to the services directive, no to neoliberalism and no to the EU constitution. And the big four didn't know which way to vote until the morning of the vote. And they come out and said, well, we can't hold this back anymore. And so the position of the British TUC, although you wouldn't know it because it hasn't put it out very widely, is against the constitution, the directives and neoliberalism. And that's a massive development that we can build on. And the question of where we do our struggling is quite important. And I say the Estonians is a good example of a tiny nation, just independent recently, accepting that we've still coherent structures that people understand each other, saying we can't carry this with the electorate. Well, they still have enough democracy to reflect that in the decision-making bodies of the government. And we have to put pressure on our government to do that. And what the bureaucracy wants to do is to remove the gains, or the democratic gains that came out of World War II, where independent democratic states were emerging and encouraged the anti-colonial movements of Africa to establish independent nations against imperialist domination. You either have imperialism or you have democracy. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. There are 2 minutes. There were a few questions put in relation to the position of the trade unions and so on, and I don't want to engage in a kind of a polemical debate about trade union strategies, and I won't keep you any more than the 2 minutes, but I think it's important that I just sort of pay people who raise the courtesy of responding to them anyhow. First of all, in relation to the vote on Thursday, I see trade union confederations and the Party of European Socialists and others declaring the outcome as a victory. Now, we didn't issue a statement declaring it as a victory here. We were we did issue a statement which was based on the thing as we understood it, and I think there's a great deal of understanding to be undertaken yet in relation to the vote on Thursday. But our approach was based on the reality that, as Brian pointed out in his opening address, that the provision for the free movement of services along with labour and goods is set out in the original Treaty of Rome itself. And there is the question about what's the best strategy, because at the end of the day, if they don't get it this way, they're going to drive it through the European Court of Justice one case after the other. And we will have court-made law rather than law that is enacted through some kind of a process. I take the point about the democratic deficit. Here in our own union here, we did rather belatedly begin to try to build a campaign and build a link between the issues which presented in the draft directive and the issues that were presenting on the ground in relation to the erosion of labour standards and exploitation and whether you call it replacement or displacement. And it did connect with people after the Irish Ferries dispute. But efforts to connect with people before that on the issue of labour standards, and we were trying to do it for a year and a half, just failed. I would have to say that somebody might say, well, it was a pretty lame campaign, and it wasn't so lame at the end, but it was late. It wasn't late by reason of any deliberate decision to fade it that way. It was late principally by reason of the fact that we have so much catching up to do in our own heads in terms of what's going on, quite frankly. And also the difficulty when of building the linkages between what's presented in that and what people are experiencing concretely on the ground. The response to the Irish Ferries thing did not come about as a result of the fact that we proposed a motion at the Congress of Trade Unions to call a national demonstration on the 9th of December. Came about as a result of the fact that that connected with people's experience, because of the effects of a free market in labour were beginning to register with people. Now, what we're going to have to do here is we're going to have to sift very carefully through the outcome of that vote to see what precisely is involved. And we're going to have to try to continue to lobby and build awareness here as best we can, because regardless as to what position you take on the outcome of the vote on Thursday, this still has a long way to go. I would expect that if the outcome when the final draft emerges is anything as positive as some people in the trade union movement on the left believe it to be, that it won't be nearly so positive after it has gone through, after it has been digested by the Commission. And I believe we still have a long way to go on that. In relation to this question about take Brendan's point about our insisting on the government voting against the eventual proposition, ultimately as a condition of our participation in so-called social partnership, I don't see that happening, because if you take that position, I think that the position you're taking is that we're not going to try and do an agreement, and I think that would be a more honest position to take than that, because that's the reality of where they are. Why are we in it? And a couple of people raised this question one way or another. Why are we in this negotiation? We're in this negotiation here in this union. And it's the position of the overall Congress of Trade Unions to see if we can get an agreement that, insofar as it's possible, addresses the issues of exploitation and the undermining of labour standards, and does something about improving the living standards of all workers. Our problem is, nothing comparing any outcome against the world as we would have it, but as against the world as it would otherwise be. And I've made a point at other fora that if we go back to what's called a free-for-all, what it means is at very, very best, it means we get a chance to have a go at the employers who employ the 25-30% of workers in the private sector who are in unions. And it means we leave all the others alone. That's what it means. Now, I'm not so sure it's a great strategy. And I agonise a great deal about it, quite frankly. But it's a better strategy than believing that by going the road of the traditional free-for-all, that we are confronting neoliberalism or confronting exploitation, because that strategy doesn't add up to that. In relation to the kind of friends we keep and so on, I take Eddie's point. My own position on this is that I will try, for as long as I'm in the position I'm in, to articulate the views of the union as decided by conference and so on at any democratic assembly, certainly any assembly of the left, and even the right of that as well, if I'm invited. But I will not be travelling to the Caribbean or anywhere else with Dennis O'Brien or any of these other people. I don't know anything about that. And I'm quite prepared to accept that people would disagree with the strategy that we're following. But it doesn't necessarily follow that because anybody else who follows that strategy keeps a particular company, that it applies to those of us who are trying to follow what we perceive to be in the best interest of workers today. And I think that it is important that I say that, because all of us who are committed to a world which is other than the world which is decided by the criteria of the free market, owe it to ourselves to try to engage in debate in an objective way, and try to recognise that because somebody takes a particular position, they're not taking that position because they are an adherent or in the pay or otherwise a beneficiary of whatever from some quarter, because it undermines the value of the conclusions we reach. I subscribe very much to what Susan George said this morning about Europe as a beacon, and I think Eddie referred to it as a Europe of common goods. But I think that we on the left, all of us, and I'm supposed to be some people here who say, well, why is he using the word we? But I see myself as being on the left. But I think that we are failing to address the issue adequately when we are not addressing the issues around economic development, economic growth, and productivity. Because while we are not confronting those issues, which are key to the future, what's happening is that then that's defined by reference to the criteria of the other side. And we didn't debate any of those issues today, in a day which was otherwise a very enjoyable and interesting day. And I'd like to join with somebody, Paller, I think it was, who spoke earlier, in complimenting the organisers. I'd like to thank Brian on behalf of the organisers and on behalf of you all for participating here, and indeed Brendan, who I think was one of the organisers, and Eddie and Maura, who gave a very interesting and enlightening contribution earlier. And I think with that then I'll close and wish you safe home. Thanks everyone.
Of Emerson and my mother, considering Neil, our next meeting is on Saturday, the 4th of March, at 11 a.m.
Next meeting, Saturday, 4th of March, at 11
I'm going to go to the next one.